Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Not long ago, it was more common to hear people say ayahuasca than ayahuasca. But as a growing number come to appreciate the healing potential of psychedelics, ayahuasca is getting treated as psychedelics avant-garde, the territory at the front where the brave venture to go. But could the vine of the dead ever go mainstream? What would be necessary to turn the famous ayah purge into a global rite of passage? The opportunities are huge. The challenges are real. You're just in time for the evolution. Welcome to The Evolver, where each week I talk with inspiring pioneers of the new consciousness culture. If you like this program, don't forget to subscribe on iTunes, Google Play, Acast, or on the podcast app of your choice. Share this episode with fellow seekers at the Maloka. Leave a rating on iTunes and post about it on social media. Our email address is theevolver@evolver.net for feedback. You can follow us on Instagram on The Evolver Podcast, and on Facebook at Evolver Social Movement. Now, let's get started.
Welcome to The Evolver, sponsored by The Alchemist Kitchen, hosted by Ken Jordan.
It's common for people who drink ayahuasca to report an encounter with a spirit they connect with the tea. In some circles, they call it grandmother ayahuasca. Other traditions think of that spirit as male. But at baseline, the experience is that the brew has sentience. It knows you. It talks to you. It takes care of you. And so, in response, many tea drinkers feel protective of ayahuasca. It's not a psychedelic you can take and go partying. For all the talk about the importance of set and setting and the growing awareness that the psychedelic journey can be a doorway to a profound spiritual experience, especially if you get the ceremonial aspects right, most people today still dose on mushrooms and LSD to party. But there's a reason why no one ever handed you a cup of ayahuasca when you were at a rave. The tea itself demands a commitment by you to do something serious. And as you discover, that commitment is mutual. So you find that people can have strong feelings about where and when ayahuasca should be taken, who should be serving, and the context it should be served in. Many experienced journeyers feel strongly that the brew should be served in the jungle by an indigenous curandero trained in a particular lineage, that without that direct connection to ancestral practices, an authenticity is lost. The experience is less powerful or less effective. And they'll say, maybe at moments when their guard is down, so that they're revealing something they prefer to keep quiet, that this is how Grandma Ayahuasca wants it. They're convinced that the grandmother needs to be taken care of. But that approach manages to overlook how the so-called traditional indigenous use of ayahuasca has itself morphed and changed in recent years. Back in the day, the shaman, who was the tribal doctor, was the one who drank the tea in order to diagnose someone who was suffering from an illness. Rarely in most tribes was the brew shared with others. It was only in response to the growing interest of gringos with dollars that curanderos began to serve larger groups of people looking to rekindle their connection to source. The idea that there's a pure way to fly to Peru and sit for a week with a bunch of other global citizens with a traditional shaman is in itself a kind of cultural imperialist fantasy. The people of the Amazon are reinventing the tradition as they go, as we all are. So how does Grandma Ayahuasca want to be made available to those who seek her? My sense is that she's happy to be offered in a wide variety of ways, as long as the container is safe and the intention is full of love. I had such an experience a few years ago when I first visited Rythmia in Costa Rica, the world's first licensed plant medicine resort with a full medical unit on the premises. At first, it seemed like such an unlikely place to take a plant spirit journey. In the words of my guest today, Gerard Powell, it was modeled after the Club Med philosophy of an all-inclusive resort experience, offering modalities, accommodations, organic meals, and first-class amenities. The campus has 81 cabanas, a pool, spa, gym, and lovely restaurant, was it even possible to have a luxury ayahuasca experience? Isn't that an oxymoron? What I discovered was that Grandma Ayahuasca loves being in a supportive locale where she can touch people who need the healing. As Jerry and I discuss in today's episode, we're seeing the creation of a new kind of culture that's holding space for the greater opening to spirit that's available to each of us. She is teaching us and showing us what we can do to be in greater service to her and to what she's in service to. Gerard Powell is the CEO of Rhythmia Life Advancement Center in Guanacaste, Costa Rica. Before Rhythmia, he was a successful entrepreneur who made millions but was living the life of an addict. The details of his hard knock story are told in the movie The Reality of Truth, which can be found easily online, and which led him to found Rhythmia after his own slow, painful recovery. The healing that plant spirit medicine makes possible can be among the most profound experiences of your life. On our planet today, there's so much healing that's calling out to be done. The need is greater than can be handled by a small number of indigenous Amazonians. Rhythmia is just one spot where spiritual innovation is taking place. Jerry is on a fascinating, remarkable journey. I hope you come away from this interview with an appreciation for his sense of wonder at the mysteries as they unfold, and that you come away with a bit more wonder yourself. Everyone seems to be talking about CBD these days, that is, cannabidiol, the non-psychoactive component of cannabis. The buzz is that CBD doesn't make you high, like THC does, but for conditions such as stress and anxiety, health professionals are increasingly recommending it as an alternative to pharmaceuticals, and scientific research is showing that CBD is highly anti-inflammatory, so it can help with pain relief. What does the scientific research say about CBD? Research centers in the United States and elsewhere are studying the effects of CBD on a variety of ailments. Scientists refer to CBD as a promiscuous compound because it offers therapeutic benefits in many different ways while tapping into how we function physiologically and biologically on a deep level. Extensive preclinical research and some clinical studies have shown that CBD has strong antioxidant, anti-inflammatory, antidepressant, antipsychotic, and neuroprotective qualities. What's the best way to take CBD? CBD-rich cannabis oil products can be taken sublingually, orally, as edibles, lozenges, beverages, tinctures, and gel caps, or applied topically. Concentrated cannabis oil extracts can also be heated and inhaled with a vape pen. Inhalation is good for treating acute symptoms that require immediate attention. The effects can be felt within a minute or two and typically last for a couple of hours. The effects of orally administered CBD-rich cannabis oil can last for 4 hours or more, but the onset of effects is much slower, like 30 to 90 minutes, than inhalation. Evolver is the proud papa of the Alchemist Kitchen, a botanical dispensary located in the Bowery District of New York, where you can find the finest quality CBD products available without THC. We also make our own premium CBD under the Plant Alchemy label. Our producer Jose's mom uses it for stress, anxiety, and high blood pressure. Our plants are grown in both field and greenhouse environments, cultivated using living soil organic principles, leveraging strictly organic inputs, and in full compliance with the controls defined by the Colorado Department of Agriculture. Our plants are some of the highest CBD cannabis varieties currently known. You can find out more about CBD by visiting the Alchemist Kitchen website at thealchemistskitchen.com. There's an S in there. And searching for CBD. There are articles on the blog, an FAQ, and a selection of vetted products. Or stop by our spot at 21 East 1st Street in Manhattan, between Bowery and 2nd Avenue, and talk to one of our staff herbalists. At the shop, tell them you listen to the Evolver podcast and receive a 10% discount on any product on the shelves. So, I was on the subway the other day, and this girl, 25-year-old, whatever, 22-year-old girl, is like staring at me. And I'm trying to figure out like, what's going on? And then finally she goes, that hat you're wearing. I was wearing a baseball cap. I was wearing my Rhythmia baseball cap. Okay. And she goes, Rio, what do you know about Rhythmia? I started to talk to her a little bit about it. I said, you know, they're friends of mine. And I love it. It's a great spot. Interesting. She's like, I really want to learn more about it. And then she goes, you know, and I told her I do the Alchemist Kitchen thing. And then she goes, you know, maybe you know my dad. And I had had lunch with him. I had lunch with him 2 days before. Okay. And she's like, I really want to go to Rythmia. So I was like, perfect, man. This is what, this is, the thing is just spreading out in this extraordinary way.
It really is, right? I mean, that's what's going on, right? That's really the bottom line. The plant is taking over, right?
Yeah. How are you seeing that down at Rythmia?
We just see like things are spreading in a non-business manner, like something else is at work, you know, like it's just the 6 degrees of separation. It's crazy how it's like the roots of a plant, like it's going in all different directions and people are bumping into each other. Like it's needle and haystack shit that's happening constantly. There's something, as goofy as this sounds from a business guy, there's something that can't be quantified that's going on. Or at least in my business career, I've never seen anything like this, you know?
Can you give me an example? Like, what are you seeing?
Yeah, like what happened to you on the train the other day. Like, we see that 40 times a week, like the craziest stuff where like someone who's never done plant medicine before sees the movie, and then on the same, the movie, The Reality of Truth, and then on the same day, bumps into someone who was wearing a Reality of Truth t-shirt, and boom, next thing you know, a week later, they're down here and doing it, and then referring other, and it just keeps going and going. It's, I don't know, it's a strange phenomenon. I never had this in any other business, you know, this kind of stuff.
No, there's a serendipity factor. Synchronicity factor, yeah. Which is intense in this world.
Intense, yeah. Intense.
You've done Burning Man? You've been to Burning Man?
No.
No.
I've been stuck to here. Oh. I haven't gotten out of here since you've seen me, Ken. I've been strapped to an ayahuasca vine down here.
That's been years. Crazy. That is wild. Yeah, but the Burning Man thing, it's just people can really, I think, relate to, is that you're on the playa, and suddenly your synchronicity, you know, frequency goes up like 150,000%. You're suddenly bumping into people in this, like one after another, in this crazy way where everything just seems to make sense. And it's a flow. And that happens also when you get into the plant medicine space. There's something that feels arranged about the way you come into an engagement with this opportunity for your own personal opening. It is outside of, you know, any kind of, there's no predicting factor here. You can't, like, I don't know how you chart that, but when
you can't chart it, I agree with that. That's one of the issues. You know, like this is, it's crazy.
So you must be seeing this 1,000 times a day then.
We're seeing so much of it, and just like amazing things, like, just all kinds of people coming, you know, and people from such different walks of life, like race car drivers, professional golfers, surfers, artists, musicians from that world, then accountants, bookkeepers, like it's like garbage truck drivers, like from the other side. And when they're here, they're all the same, exactly the same. It's a wild. It's really like of the things I've done in my life, this is just the most satisfying, interesting, and confusing thing I've ever been involved with, you know, at the same time.
It's totally brilliant. I love that. So you're, I remember, you know, when you guys were starting it out, and I came down to visit just before you opened.
Yes.
And we talked a lot about your approach, the strategy. Right. The strategy was, you know, most people, when they hear about ayahuasca, when they hear about plant medicine, they think, oh, man, the last thing I want to do is end up in, you know, in a hammock in the mud in Peru, you know, in some flea bitten situation where it's like the guy, nobody speaks English. You know, it's jungle rain,
You know, everywhere I turn, I have no amenities. I can't take a decent shower. You know, like concern about sort of, you know, stepping into an environment that is, that many people feel is adventurous, but unsafe, right? And not a place where you could relax or at least, you know, devote yourself fully to the kind of experience that might be coming forward because of a lot of the cultural challenges, right?
Right.
And it, you know, you want to talk a little bit about that? Because we talked about this a lot back then.
I love that because you're dead on. So our idea was actually to take an experience that happened to me and replicate it in an environment that would be comfortable for a banker from the Midwest, like, you know, very, very familiar surroundings. And so we bought a small resort and added in all those comforts to make it an easier experience. And thought that people would come. You know, that was the thing. And we structured Ken, since you've been there's so much around it. It actually mimics my experience, the experience that changed my life. And it's interesting, we're approaching this week coming will be our 5,000th guest, you know?
Whoa, and amazing.
And crazy, right? And yeah. And the more interesting part about that is, because we keep data on everything, right, is 93.78% of them report having the same miracle, this merging of the soul thing. It's crazy, right? And it sounds made up, but as a result of all this, we became the highest consumer-rated resort of any type in the world on TripAdvisor.
What? Like
we're a little tiny. Yeah.
No.
Genius. That's the craziest shit, right? Like more than like the Waldorf. Like we crushed the Waldorf, right?
I love this. Waldorf doesn't get 92%. They get maybe 91%. You guys get 93.5%.
Can I show you, this is the funniest part about this is that if you can believe this, right? And this is all consumer reported, so we can't do anything about it, right?
Yeah.
But out of 716 reviews, there's 703 excellent. 703 excellent, 7 good, 3 average, 2 poor, and 1 terrible. That's the high, like out of 700, right?
That's extraordinary.
It's extraordinary, right? Amazing. And the reviews, the people talk about their stuff, and you know, only what, 20% of people fill in one of these, right? So it's crazy. So like, you know, people actually come here. You're going to get a charge out of this. People show up. They booked and they show up and they say, so when are the cooking classes? Did they think that plant medicine was you know, cooking with peppermint, you know?
Like, oh my God.
So and they people, do great, yeah. Ken.
Really?
They all go through the program and do great.
So we said go through the program. Describe the program. And I'm assuming, like, just up front, the program includes at least a session with ayahuasca, right?
Yeah, the program's with ayahuasca, but it has, so there's classes each day, about 4 hours worth of workshop programming each day, and then journeys 4 nights, and integration 4 afternoons, 2 breath work, transformational breath work classes and sessions, you know, gravity fed colonics, massage, stem cell therapy. There's all things that go into this now that are crazy, but it produces this result.
Stem cell therapy, in all of my experiences with ayahuasca, and there's more than a couple, I have never coupled that with stem cell therapy. I'm really curious, like, how do you bridge this? What's going on there?
Well, you know, I'm not the doctor, clearly, right? But actually, this came to me in the medicine to to get involved in the stem cell side of things. It's an add-on, it's additional, but we're, you know, we're in the stem cell business in a company called NovaCell that's on site here. And a lot of the athletes that come through and actors and stuff do both. They do 4 days of ayahuasca, 2 days of breath work, and then a stem cell treatment before they go home. And they're like popping, you know, popping, right?
Amazing. But,
but most of people don't, like 97% of people don't do the stem cells. They just do the regular program. And if you read what's happening in their lives, I mean, like Bobby Brown had a huge like breakthrough here. Just like guys that you'd think would be the last people that would be doing ayahuasca. We get tons of people from the rap business that I can't, you know, talk about, but Bobby out and out came, Kelly Slater, the surfer, all these people come down, and Terrence Howard, the actor, and do this thing. Those are people that allow us to say they were.
You can actually say their names. Yeah. Cause we got to be discreet about a lot of this. It's not necessarily.
Yeah. So many people come here and we can't say, and it's just amazing. And the transformations that occur, here's the craziest part. So those, I keep data on everything. I can tell you everything, but 6 months later, 97.55% of the people that reported they had that particular miracle report electronically that it's still working in their lives. So like, this is not a workshop or something that goes away. It's you get to keep it. And that's the greatest gift. It's the greatest gift to reprogram someone is the greatest gift.
So powerful. So how many of the people who come down there have not had plant medicine or ayahuasca experience before?
93%.
Really? So most people there, it's first time for them sitting with the vine.
Yeah, here's what's so crazy. Every week there's at least two people who've never even drank alcohol. So we have such a wide array of folks, but 93% generally have not done ayahuasca. About 31% have done mushrooms at some point. You know, but they're really, like, if you take a look at the people that come through, a lot of these people are from the business world and the tech world, and the business people more than the tech people have not really experimented with this stuff. And usually what we hear is, you know, I've been thinking about doing it for a while and I wanted to do it, but I was afraid of, you know, being immersed in a culture that I didn't understand and a country that I was unfamiliar with people from another country that speak the language, blah, blah, blah. Yeah, the regular stuff. And by the way, Ken, I did ayahuasca in the jungle, and it tripped me out. I was getting crawled on by bugs and stuff. And I was I don't like this. I don't like that. I'm a city person, I guess, you know. I need a nice mattress and clean rooms and stuff.
Yeah, well, you know, there's so many people in the quote unquote ayahuasca scene, right, who feel that there's a level of authenticity that comes with the crazy roughing it piece, right?
Yeah.
That you just, you know, you take a big inhalation, you walk into the jungle, you don't know what you're going to find, you're being challenged on all kinds of levels. It's, and then you're working with indigenous people who are working within a lineage, and they're bringing the lineage into play in the way that they work with you, which may be challenging, but at the same time, it's also somehow, I mean, there's this idea that it's somehow purer or more.
Well, and I want to speak to that too, because that's an important part. So the way our program works is on Monday night, we have Shipibo trained, a Shipibo ceremony. Tuesday night is our own medicine that we mix and brew here.
You make your own medicine there on Rhythmia? At Rhythmia? Make your own?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow. Uh-huh. Fascinating.
And then Wednesday night is a feminine night. It's a female night by Colombian trained female shaman, and all of the help and staff are female. And our ratio too, by the way, is about 7 to 1. It's seven guests for every staff member, right?
In the ceremony, you mean?
In the ceremony, yeah. And then on Thursday night, we have a traditional Colombian Punta Mayo ceremony by shamans trained there. And I mean, we served more medicine in the past 3 years, we believe, than anywhere else in the world, right? And these the experience is down to we're really getting into the gnat's testicle of what every little piece of it, you know, because we even have an FOB system where it tracks where you're at, how many classes you attend, which ones you went to, what's the highest success rate. Like we're pretty getting more scientific about it, you know?
So just to say though, that there was, and I still think it's prevalent among, you know, the folks who think of themselves as, you know, the heavy hitters in the ayahuasca world, that, there is this thing about stigma. Being in the jungle, and there's a stigma about you guys are kind of taking the easy route. Like you're not doing the 100% real thing.
Yes.
Okay. So what do you say to that?
Absolutely. We are. we're the easy way. Yeah. I'm going to say thank you for singing to my choir, you know, like, yes, mm-hmm. you know, it is the easy way. And I want to tell you there.
Well, no, you're giving the wrong answer, man. The wrong answer. There is no easy way.
Hello. There is no easy. This is the easier way.
The real deal is it's never easy. Okay.
It's not. It's terrible.
So everything else is just an illusion. Everything else is just super.
I agree.
It's the icing on the outside of the cake. So
how hard do you want to make it too, though? You know, like it's hard enough. Like we try to make it super, and you have to see Ken, the Armaloka now is 8,000 square feet.
Oh my God.
Like, everything has changed since you've been here, right?
Wow.
The different conference centers and
I'm sorry. No, I have to pause you there. You have a conference center?
Yeah, we have a big conference center with, you know, seats 100 and our medical center. We have all kinds of stuff that wasn't here when you were here. But, and we really do try to take the sting out of it, you know, but it's still.
No. Yeah. So the conference center, I have to ask you about the conference center. You're the only ayahuasca based location in the world that I'm aware of that has its own conference center. So who's doing conferences? What kind of conferences are happening?
Well, it's more like a guest speaker center, We have guest speakers. So it's like a conference room that sits an auditorium that sits 100, you know, mm-hmm. seats 100.
Okay.
The whole thing has changed, and the system is like you're in this class, then you're on to this class, then you eat, then you get your massage, then you go to your colonic, then you go to one more class, then you go to ceremony, then the next day. We're programmatic, and we're tracking everything, and I mean we're tracking everything.
Cool.
Yeah, so it's making the us become more and more and more efficient. Like last night there were, I guess, 81 in ceremony, you know, I was in ceremony last night too. And
what kind of ceremony was it? What of the group that you, I'm sorry, I didn't remember the calendar.
We had the all night. We had the Colombian ceremony last night. So I just got out of ceremony about an hour and 10 minutes ago. All night. But
how you feeling?
I feel great. I feel like just super tuned in, you know, super tuned in.
So can you talk a little bit about last night? Like what happened for you?
Well, I had a wild one last night myself. I went to the bathroom more times than I can count, but, on my second drink, I just got to this palace. And, I was just watching the workings of the palace and why the palace had all these moving parts. My heart, it was cleaning my heart. So this is crazy. I know that makes zero sense, right? But it was.
That's how this stuff works. Yeah.
It's how it works. And I want to tell you, when you say that to someone that has never heard anything like that, they'll look at you like you have 48 heads, right? But once you experience it, and you know that your heart has been cleaned, and you can only, you can't undo that. You can only screw it up again. Like, it feels like $1 million. Like, hey, you know what? If I keep my shit together, my heart is clean from going forward. You know, it's good stuff.
Oh, it's huge stuff. It's huge stuff. So you were saying how the program you built there was really an extension of the program that you went through yourself.
Yeah, it's my journey. And the craziest thing is, so listen to this, 73.82% of these people that come here have sacred or psychic surgery, however you look at it. And of that, 81% is performed by aliens. Uh-huh. So the people have psychic, you know, surgery by alien, three quarters of them. And then 81% of those are by alien. And about 70% of those are divided into three different types of aliens. You can't make this.
This is in your survey? You're getting this in the survey? The psychic surgery is happening during the ceremony?
Yep. Yep. Yeah. And
can I ask you, what is the question you ask to find that out? Like, how is that phrased? Did you receive psychic surgery by an alien in your ceremony?
During the classes, we tell them, you know, how many percentage of people get it and what to expect.
Right.
And what to say, because you can talk them out of it. You say no, and they shy away and all these different things. So you have to say yes to them. And then we count how many people had surgery. 6 months later, how many people still believe they had surgery, if the surgery worked, da-da-da-da-da. Like, we go the whole thing. So, and so there are those that will argue that that's preloading, but it's really not. It's actually a repetition of what's occurring. If that does preload in some instances, it does. But the data had to be there before the loading happened. Yeah.
Yeah.
So we just noticed that all these people were reporting that they had surgery, because I talk about what happened to me in my surgery in the opening talk, you know, the opening discussion. And these are the things that are happening, and they're happening to everybody. And you couldn't make this up. You couldn't blindfold 1,000 people and say what happened to you. And then 700 of them said, hey, we had this surgery, and of that three quarters, like 31% of that is surgery by one exact type of being that constantly gets reported. This mechanical praying mantis, you know, crazy shit, dude. Right?
Oh, I know this. I know this praying mantis. Yes,
you do.
That's interesting. Okay, so I didn't meet it at Rhythmia though, but there's. So, do we want to go here? Yeah, I may as well. We can always cut it out if it's too fucking crazy. The alien thing, whether they manifest as quote unquote aliens, or whether they manifest as angels, or whether they manifest as some other kind of form of disembodied spirit, or they manifest as, you know, in some other symbolic way, these energies come through, and a lot of, they can have a specificity to them that comes through the cultural context, or maybe even you're teeing it up in a way. This is how I see it, right? You're teeing it up in a way so you're helping people understand the experience so that they have a form that they can engage with it through, right? But there's something that goes on here, which is this, you know, it's this universal connection to source, right? Effectively, right? That has a way of, you know, showing itself in different faces. Effectively. Uh-huh. I mean, that's kind of how I see it anyways, how I experience it.
It's an interesting question because it comes up every week. After this is all said and done, we go to a closing circle and everybody talks about who came and what they did and da da da. And then it says, then it always comes to this, who are they? Are they real? Are they in me? Are they outside of me? Are they collectively here? Like, it's the questions, right?
Yeah. And those are all real. And it also gets magnified by group. That is to say, There's something that happens when you have a lot of people in the room who are resonating with a similar kind of thing. Like, you know, I've been in a room where 15 or 20 of us all saw a 20-foot tall big blue bird in the corner, like with its wings. Uh-huh.
Doing, it's was like, it a man bird or just the bird?
It was a bird. It was a pretty cool bird. I was like, whoa.
I was going to chalk up. I might have been the 21st.
Really? Yeah. Well, you know, different room. But it was one of those things where, you know, everybody goes, oh, yeah, you saw the bird. I saw the bird. You saw the bird? Yeah, that was a good bird. Yeah. Wow. You know, these things can, there's something about the way our consciousnesses are all interlinked effectively, where energetic things can manifest in a vision like that, right? You know, I always feel it gets dangerous if you try to, you know, get too literal about it and say, oh, it means this. This
yes,
is that.
I agree.
Right?
Yeah.
Then you get into religion. You get into these kinds of structures where it's like, you're right or you're wrong. You know, oh, that's the right way to see it. It's like, sorry. Uh-huh. You know,
and that's a slippery slope. The whole thing is, it's a slippery slope.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. But holding space for people to discover what it means for them is a powerful thing to do, right? Holding that, that giving people an opportunity to come into contact with this kind of stuff and find meaning for themselves. Often in the process, at a time when the worldview that they had, you know, only maybe a few hours earlier has just been rocked. And they're like, what just happened to me? Where am I? What universe is this? You know, what does it mean to be a human being on this planet and to be successful and to be living, you know, a life with relationships the way I've always thought I had them? Right? It's like all that gets kind of, you know, challenged, right? And for some people, they wanted to have the certainty. It's like, oh, yeah. Like, oh, that meant that. I now have another answer, a different answer than I had before, but at least I have an answer. But I feel like my experience has been that people I know too, I think, that it's slipping into another answer is not necessarily the big opportunity. The big opportunity is more allowing yourself to keep asking questions from a place of openness.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Clearly the right way of looking at that. Clearly, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. It's powerful. It's powerful the way you're holding that space for all these people coming through. So can you talk a little bit? I know you've done other podcasts where you've talked about your story, which is one of those stories. It's like, you know, it's a Moby Dick mother whale of a story. But if you could just share a little bit of it here and what it was that you went through in your own process of development and growing that you bring to the programming at Rythmia, that would be really powerful.
Yeah, so my thing was I was a real, you know, I turned into, well, I was a high school dropout as a kid and I got into business and I made some money. I got averagely successful. Then I got like a slightly above averagely successful. And I had taken a company public at one time and had about $140 million net worth. And then went broke and started and sold another company for cash. And I had about $90 million in cash. And my life was a wreck. It was a train wreck of a life. Like I was addicted to injectable Demerol. I injected Demerol every day, and was doing cocaine as a counterbalance, and Xanax, and drinking, and so many women like crazy. It was just completely out of control. And I was a terrible guy. I was a terrible husband. I was a terrible father. I was suicidal. I tried to commit suicide 2 times. And one thing led to another and led me to plant medicine, to do iboga in Costa Rica. And I was suicidal at the time. I was gonna kill myself if I didn't do it. And I went down and I had this wild experience where I was flown to the moon and landed on the moon, and the moon typed, didn't talk, it typed. Uh-huh. And it was telling me all this crazy stuff. And then it showed me a video of my grandfather molesting me. And in that minute, it explained everything to me. I understood why I was the way I was. And at the same time, my soul came to me and merged back with me. And then the moon gave me a brand new heart, as crazy as that shit sounds. And that was July 4th of 2014. And the next journey that I had, she told me to buy a place and to do it for other people. And I bought this thing 2 months later after that. And I canceled my whole life and came down here and fought to get a license. And that took a year and change, and opened in February-ish of 2016. And to a whopping 2 people, we opened the dive. I built this whole thing. You know, we spent, you know, tens of millions, right? And 2 people showed up, and I was like, well, I guess the moon makes mistakes too, you know?
Oh, man. Well, so I was there just before the opening, right? So I got a sense of that.
Yes.
Yeah. So it was like 3 years ago. So you were only like two or three years into your process at that point. After iboga.
Yeah.
Like I said, you've done these powerful podcasts, and there's the film also about your story. And I think it was a Chris Ryan one I was listening to recently, and there was a Kyle, what's his name? I'm sorry, I'm spacing it out. I would just say people should go check those out to really hear you talk very movingly.
They're really good. I mean, as far as, you know, sometimes your life is just an example, like to show people how fucked up it can get, right?
Yeah.
And how much hope there is. But the thing is, if it wasn't for that medicine, I was a dead man. I was a dead man walking. Yeah.
Yeah. So talk, like, if you don't mind, what actually got you to do iboga for the first time?
What got me to is that I told my therapist, who's now my chief medical officer here. I told my therapist that, and he was a full-time therapist, 5 days a week, 6 hours a day.
For you.
I was in terrible shape. Wow. And that he had me for 4.5 years by the time things had gotten this bad. And I told him I was going to kill myself. And he said, no, you got to try something else. And I went on vacation and I posted some shit on Facebook when a lady who was from Williamsburg, she was a shaman from Williamsburg.
There's a lot of shamans in Williamsburg right now, actually.
I know there are, right? I know. And this lady said, I was in the Philippines. She said, I'm coming to the Philippines. And I met her through Jeff just like one time. She said, I want to stop in on you. And she came to my hotel and she told me she had a vision that I was going to kill myself, and that she had a friend who went to this place in Costa Rica and did this medicine called iboga, and it saved his life. And no shit, within a couple of days, I was in Costa Rica doing that, because I was that close to calling it a day.
What,
you know?
What did you say iboga was? What did you understand it to be before the ceremony?
I didn't know. I didn't know. I just knew it was a plant and that it made people super sick. And it saved this one guy's life, who apparently was a lot like me. He was a sex addict, womanizer, bad guy. And it really saved this guy's life. You know, and that to me, coming from this lady who had nothing to gain by helping me. I just thought, if it's either, you know what I said to myself? I said, well, I'll do this, and if it doesn't work, I'll commit suicide.
Wow.
And I'll try this before I kill myself. And I have to tell you, Ken, people find it so hard to believe, right? Because, you know, I'm a guy, I spent $750,000 on different therapies. I spent almost $200,000 on rehab. Like nothing at all made a dent. Nothing. I was beyond help. And to have such a profound experience that 1 week actually changed the course of my life, and it did. It's a line in the sand, a departing point, and it really, really did. And it's just hard to believe. And it did. And I see it do it for all kinds of people. You know, I'm an extreme example of what most people are going through. Most people might, you know, drink a little too much or have too much pressure in business, no longer in love with their wife or their husband, just going through the motions. Probably 90% of them have considered, or the thought has run through their head, that one day they might end their life. It's part of the American culture, right?
Mm-hmm.
To be prescription dependent, or to be shopping dependent, or to be workaholic, you know? So I was an exaggerated version of what goes on in most people's life. And if it could do that for me, and when you get to know me, Ken, when you first met me, I was fresh out of the gate when you met me. So much as I'm 270 ceremonies into this thing now, right?
Wow.
I don't even, when I see posts that I made on Facebook, thank God for Facebook. When I see things I used to say, and I think, number one, what a douche. But number two, who is this guy? You know, like, who is this person? Because it's no longer here. It's crazy, the differences in life. Yeah, crazy.
So that experience with Iboga, one time really was enough for you to kick a heavy dependency on alcohol.
It was an alcohol, cocaine, Xanax at that moment, you know, a triple one. And it was rough, you know, and not only does it mean, you know, that those things are gone, tons of other shit went out with it, like cigarettes. Like, I was a crazy cigarette smoker since I started at 13, but I started seriously smoking at 16, right? And smoked 2 packs a day for 40 years, right?
Wow.
I don't smoke. You know, I don't smoke cigarettes. I don't. And it took so much away, you know, so much away.
So what would you say to somebody who has a problem with alcohol and they're thinking, but man, you know, the last thing I need is like a psychedelic in order to clean up, right?
Here's how I go down that road, right? Nobody has a problem with alcohol. They have a problem with something that happened early on in life, this breach, and they're trying to now address it with alcohol, right? And probably that breach, that initial breach that happened, the split that we call here the split, and this stuff I can track back by client. They go back to where they split, right? But this split occurred, and then that split gets reenacted in different ways throughout the course of their life, and now they're 40 years old, and they're drinking 3 or 4 drinks a night, and they shouldn't be, right? Well, it's not an alcohol problem. It's a split problem, right? So we go back to the split. You repair the split by acknowledging what it was and then merging back with your soul. And this is what we do here. This is soul merging. This is all this place is about. And merge back with your soul. And then all of a sudden, the need to do the behavior goes away. Because I want to tell you, you know, it's a white knuckle life. if you're just going to try to behave your mud. Anything. I don't care if it's porn. I don't care if it's shopping at Macy's. I don't care what the hell it is. Whatever your thing is, gambling. If you're going to white knuckle it, you're going to get prepared to drink a lot of coffee and go to a lot of these meetings. Yeah. That's not really how I would choose to go through life. Yeah. But if you get to the split and you repair that through this process, like show me who I become, merging back with my soul and heal my heart. These are the intentions, the group intentions. And they all, you know, these things go away. And if they don't go away, they diminish to where they're non-event. So what does it typically look like after a week of ayahuasca for a guy that's drinking four drinks a night? He probably goes home, feels like $1 million. 2 weeks later, has a drink, maybe gets drunk, but usually not, a drink or two, and then decides that either drinking's not for him, he no longer has the desire to, or he can go out and have a drink. The AA people are going to kill me, but he can go out and have a drink here and there and have it not mean anything. And this is where people get crazy, right? Mm-hmm. But that tends to be what happens.
So what would you say to somebody who's an AA guy, maybe has been an AA person for years, and is curious about trying plant medicine?
I would say that the founder of AA discovered AA, the Walton guy, on a belladonna journey, which you can research it. It's true. So belladonna was a psychedelic that they were using in the 1920s and 30s. And his vision of this whole AA thing came through on a plant medicine journey. So, like, I don't know. I would just go back to the first step and try it.
Uh-huh. And do you know people who have come from that experience, who are AA people who come down to Rhythmia, have done the ceremonies, and they don't find that
so
as a
many.
Door? Yeah, and it's not like they don't end up back on Skid Row. I'm like, it doesn't end
no,
up.
No, so many people come through now. We're no longer a registered. We're our license now is for a short stay, medically licensed plant medicine healing center. We used to be an addiction center, but the addictions were very restrictive. So right now, you know, most people that come here are more like a heavy drinker rather than an addict. And more than three quarters, 81 or 82% are psycho-spiritual journeyers. They're just, you know, people that want a change in their life. Like they came down for the spiritual experience of it. Not because they have an addiction, but yet when you dive in to everybody's life, you know, everybody's addicted to something. Like a guy that works 80 hours a week swearing to me he's not addicted to anything, you know? And I'm like, oh, yes, I understand, you know?
Right, totally. So,
right.
So in the surveys that you're doing, are you tracking the addiction stuff? Are you seeing people who have come with problems and are finding them resolved or maybe had a history of addiction issues and
like
they're staying clean?
When we were doing more of it, we were tracking that. Now we're just tracking it in a broader sense. We're saying, is the miracle that you had here, is it still working in your life? So if they're an addict, they're no longer addicted. If they're, and that's what we track at the 6 month point.
So I'm curious then, were there any specific numbers around that, around the addiction stuff that you could share? I'm curious.
Well, I don't have good enough numbers from then, because that's right around when you were here. That was only the first 5 or 6 months we're open. We don't have enough data, you know, to do that, because the way we've grown, we went from 300 people in 2016, 300 for the year.
Wow.
To 3,000 people last year. And we were clicking off our 5,000th client this upcoming week. So it's growing on an arc, you know? So the most recent data is data that's the best. Yeah.
Yeah. It's amazing how it's growing so fast. That's genius. I love that.
Yeah.
So the first year was more of a, how did you feel about when you were in that? It was like 300 people over the course of, you know, what, 12 months? I think you opened up like in February or something. And was there a sense that, you know, you're pushing against the current here? Like maybe the world didn't,
yeah,
wasn't ready
for
it?
Yeah, you know what I thought? I thought maybe the plant medicine, like that told me to do it, was like lying to me. I thought, oh my God, I got duped by like by iboga. Like it saved my life. And then it told me to go. For a couple months there, I was thinking, you know what? Maybe the medicine just wanted me to be broke and to find something out like there, you know? And in the final analysis, you know, she was right about everything, about everything, which to me is, you know, it sounds statistically impossible that some psychedelic experience could have predicted how this thing would roll out, you know? It just sounds crazy, right?
Well, you're talking to the wrong guy. Yeah, it doesn't sound crazy to me. But
I forgot who I was talking to.
But yeah, I mean, I can understand the moment where you go like, oh my God, what did I just get myself into? That is I understand that really well.
That bad feeling, I know.
So yeah. when did it turn for you? When did you notice it shifted?
About halfway through 2017, we looked up and, you know, like we're working, we looked up and we just started noticing, you know, lots of people were showing up. You know, and I was thinking, oh, it might be a one-off thing. And then I met Graham Hancock after that. And Graham's on our board of directors here, you know, and he helped a lot. And then all of the thought leaders what's crazy is the thought leaders come and they do a talk, you know, they do a talk for a few hours one day. And all of them are just blown away at the healings that occur by the time the people leave. And so the thought leaders become our greatest advertisers. Like they take their personal clients that they're having trouble with or are stuck and send them to us.
That's awesome. Yeah, because that's what we were talking about in the first place, is how Evolver could help you bring some people down there.
Like I remember that. I was desperate. Do you remember how desperate I was, Ken?
Yes.
Please don't leave.
Well, no, I mean, desperate wasn't the word I would lose, but I mean, but it was, there was definitely a sense of like, wow, you're opening this thing up. And the thought leaders could be the catalyst. Right? That's what we talked about. And it was clear.
Absolutely.
That's the way to go. And then, but it's, you know, it's tricky to advertise around that, which is to say,
yeah, it is.
You know, you do a traditional marketing thing and everybody goes like, what? These guys are selling ayahuasca trips down. They have no integrity. These guys got no, how can they have any integrity if they're doing advertising? You know, like there's all of these consciousness community kind of assumptions about how to be a good citizen in this yeah. world, which is also like how to be a spiritual person, you know, which I'm sure you get again and again. We all see it. It's like, oh, if you're a spiritual person, you don't make any money by doing that, do you? Right?
Yeah, I know.
Which is to say, yeah.
There's so much of that, right? There's so much of that in the community, and then the community wonders why the community is broke, right? There's like this
yeah.
theory that like, I don't, and that's why we're a little bit of an outcast, Ken, as you know. We do want it to make money. We do want to, we do advertise. We do things that are not. You know, that are just, we're not part of the culture before us, right?
Well, yeah.
But now you'll
yeah.
see lots of other people doing the same thing. You know, it's crazy.
Well, let's step that back a bit, because you're going to say, yeah, you do want it to make money, which is to say, you do want the people who are living there, working there, to be able to pay their rent and get fed, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah. It's like there's livelihood involved. Like, why should you have a crappy job doing something that's destroying the environment and driving the world to war? If you can be paid to do things that are helping people move into a shift in their own lives, and you can't expect that everybody's just going to volunteer all the time to do spiritual and aligned work. In fact, that is a totally dysfunctional understanding of what a society ought to be. The society ought to be a place where people who are doing the good work are being supported by the society, that they're in they have livelihood.
Even with you, Ken, if Evolver, if the Alchemist Kitchen, if any of these things don't make money, they die. What I would love to see, I would love to see guys look at these businesses and say, you know, instead of a car wash, instead of a strip club, instead of a securities, let me open up a retreat center. Dude, that's what the world needs. The world needs less of everything else and more of this stuff.
Totally.
And let's be really honest. If these things don't make some money, nobody's ever going to do them other than us crazies that ventured out, right?
Tell me about it. No, and I can't remember if we got this in the beginning of the podcast or not, but it's not as if you're making mint on what you're doing there. Like, if you wanted to make money, another way to do it, right? There's other things you could do to make real money. I mean, and you have done them, right? And as I understand it, you know, you're supporting this massively pocket.
I always start out my thing by saying, anybody who thinks I'm here because I wanted to make money, my next book is How Not to Fucking Make Money, A Tale of Rhythmia. You know, I can show you exactly how not to do it. I mean, exactly.
What I see, and you can correct me if I'm wrong or if I'm mythifying it or anything, but essentially you did make a lot of money doing other things.
Made a ton of money.
And then what you've basically done is sunk it into Rhythmia so you can get it to the place where it can be sustainable and you can live there doing good work. And you have it it maintains itself as an institution that's available to people doing this great work, and you have a place to live amidst that. And, you know, you're not going to turn this around and sell it in 3 years to somebody else.
Oh my God, no. Like the thing that you said that's absolutely spot on true is we're trying to make a living and do this work. And I tell you what's crazy, right? I took a 98% cut in pay to do this thing. And yet I'm having the time of my ever loving life. Like this is, I've never had anything this rewarding. I've never, ever, ever felt anything like this, you know?
It's so powerful. It's a huge, huge thing. So are you finding the people you knew from your old life are showing up there now? People you would never have expected to come?
Yeah, they are. They are. And it's so crazy because, you know, people, happiness is attractive, right? And when people see someone who used to be terminally unhappy and they know them and they really are happy, then that's the best advertisement. And by happy, I don't mean schoolgirls skipping down the street happy. I mean really content and deep in their work and loving the challenges of life. Like it's a different person. So many people come and see me and say, you know, I want to get some of that, you know, because so many people are disgruntled and especially, you know, you wouldn't believe this, how many younger people we get. They just look at the whole system and go, you know what? Fuck no. Like I got to do something different. Right. And that always amazes me that the kids are so sharp now. They're so far ahead. I mean, when I was a kid, all I wanted to do was drive a fancy car and sleep with as many women as I could. And these kids don't even want to get their license. They want to, you know what I mean?
Like totally
they're so
it.
Goddamn
yeah.
smart.
Yeah.
They want experiences, not things. They're like, man, the kids are, you got to admit, this is a super cool bunch of kids that are coming up now.
Well, I'll tell you what I see. What I see is you got a group of them, right? The kids who are coming up who have access to this kind of culture are totally tuned in. and really high vibe. I don't know if there's enough of them. So that's my thing.
I got it.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. It's like, well, you're in the city too. You get a better view of it than me. You know, I'm down here, and a lot of the kids I see are Costa Rican kids, you know?
Oh, that's interesting. And, cool. Well, you know, maybe they make them better down there. Our producer, Jose Alfaro, is from Costa Rica. I'm staring at him across the table. So, you know, he's an example, wearing his Allison Gray hoodie with his Alex Gray tattoo on one arm and Beethoven on the other. So yeah, I mean that we see it, but that's the question. Is this going to happen fast enough? Because I'll tell you what, the thing that is so present, I think, for many people who start going down this path and are doing this kind of journey work, spiritual work, whether it's with plant medicine or not, I mean, it could be through meditation and intense yoga work and, you know, Chinese energy healing work. And, you know, there's all these different modalities that are out there that are now surfacing kind of like in parallel, which are different ways for people to connect to source and essentially shift their understanding of what it is to be a human being on this planet at this time. And when that happens, it seems many people that I know are tuning into the planet's ecological crisis and feel a sense of personal responsibility around that, because there is a sense that there's not a lot of time to fix things if they can be fixed. Particularly the plant journey people get that in ceremony. They get that hit. It's like, because they're working with something from the jungle. It's a jungle voice. It's a jungle spirit and energy. It's like, hey man, you know, the jungle made me, and you know, there's a lot of wisdom, and you silly apes, man, are just missing it. You're not paying attention, right? To what's going on, right?
So true.
Are you getting that among the folks in the arrhythmia world? Like, are they getting kind of hit?
You know, because the people that we attract are so in the shift. You know what I mean? They're so deep into it that I have a false sense of what's going on. You understand?
Believe me, I am in a bit of a bubble myself in Manhattan, where I am.
I forgot. Yes, you are.
But yeah, but I'm definitely. I hear what you're saying. That there's you can't get in that bubble and kind of feel like you're not really connecting to the flow. But among the people in your world, that's something that the people who show up at Rhythmia, maybe the accountants from you know Des Moines, right?
Yes.
Do you see something happen when they're there?
Absolutely, yes. Like, this is what's so crazy. It's like somebody, you know, in the elephant, when you blow in the elephant tusk in the jungle and all the animals start coming, that the people even from Des Moines, right, that the accountant or the mid-level manager at a big HR company or something that comes here, they're so thirsty, and they know that there's this thing going on, and they want to participate in it because it's happening in them. See, I really believe that this is some vibrational, tonal thing that is going throughout the country, right? It's a country, Canada, Europe. I mean, it's everywhere. People are changing. They're looking at – I don't know if it's they're drawn to this – I don't know if they're drawn to it through some spiritual thing, or if they're just looking at things and knowing something is wrong and wanting something else. I don't know. It's one of the two, though, you know?
Yeah, I feel the same way. I feel that, too. It's a wave. And it's in the last 2 or 3 years, it's growing. Ooh. Massively.
Yes.
Massively. The shift is it's palpable.
It really is, right? It's discernible. Is it, or is it just us?
Oh, no. This is really happening. And so then, you know, I go into this place of being a total goofball mystic where I just go, oh man, this thing is just riding really high. I'm just going to stay with it. See what happens. It doesn't always, it doesn't always work out the way I would like it to. This is, you know, it's like you open your thing and you're there for the first year. It's 300 people. And you're like, oh no.
What did I do?
What the hell did I just do? Well, I'm like so deluded. But then, you know, you learn and you hold on. A lot of it's about being stubborn. you know, and sticking to what feels right in your body, ultimately, right? And then you're like, okay, let's see, you know. Alchemist Kitchen really worked. Like, some things that we're doing are really working. We have this new thing, Evolver Awakening. We're early. I'm learning. We're learning. You know, the people who are in it love it, right? Okay. Uh-huh. You know, but we're learning a lot about what does it mean to create community for people basically who've been through things like rhythmia and are ready to go deeper and connect, right? And they're not necessarily ready to commit to a strict Tibetan Buddhist path or a strict TM path or you know, become, you know, heavy duty yogis and spending, you know, 3 weeks a year in India. You know, it's like, if you're not going down one of those routes, right? There's a lot of people who are opening up in different ways and they're isolated. They come home from rhythmia and who do they talk to? You know what I'm saying? It's like that.
Yep.
There's a lot of that.
100%.
Yeah. So we're creating a space for those people. But I'll tell you something. There's no list. You can't mail them.
I know. Now, Ken, that's such an interesting point though, right?
Yeah.
So nobody has aggregated these people yet, but when they do, what a force.
Yes.
Like, when I say what a force for change.
Yes.
Like, if there was one message, one central point, one repository of these people, because this is huge, and yet it's so fragmented. And somebody is going to do this. There's some application probably is going to do this.
Well, or so it doesn't have to be necessarily a single one. I mean, it may be the kind of thing where it's an emergent thing, but it starts with people realizing that they're not on their own, that they're part of something that's a wave. It's a big wave. And then being comfortable affiliating with that wave. Because one of the things that happens when you first start to have that opening and you're realizing that something is happening, that is distancing you from your tradition, your own sense of self, that as you've known yourself all your life, that's no longer quite working. That's no longer working anymore. You realize it's almost a dead end. But at the same time, you don't know where you're going. You don't realize that you're in a process of growth and development towards a deeper connection to source.
Right.
You just don't know it's happening until it's happened, okay? So that's the challenge, that's the trick. Is that most of the people that I know who have gone through that path at the moment when they could most use the support and the help don't know they need it. Then, you know what I'm saying? And it hits them a little later. It's like, wow, had I known like a year ago that I could, you know, was it going to happen? I would have loved to have been in community with 10 other people who I could talk to about this. If you talk to the folks who are in those lineages, like once, you know, like in a Tibetan Buddhist lineage or whatever, they know that process. They understand this process really well because they've been dealing with it hundreds or thousands of years, whatever. And so, you know, they can help people through the steps of that open and that shift away from their materialist understanding of the world into a different, more connected, source-based connection to the world and help people through the challenges, right? But, you know, but most people in America don't have those affiliates. I'm not going to end up in saffron robes, man. It's just not going to happen to me.
Yeah.
Right. So anyway, so this is the fascinating thing. It's like we have all these people who are opening up and they're like free floating, like figuring it out. Now, the exciting thing to me about it is that there's a culture that's emerging that's holding space for people having that opening.
Uh-huh.
That's the fascinating. It's coming through, you know, like, so spots like Rhythmia or Alchemist Kitchen or like all these other consciousness type venues, yoga studios and meditation centers and all that, where you don't have to commit deeply to a lineage, but you can float. You know, the lineage guys will say, oh, that's the supermarket approach. You're like taking a little of this, a little of that. It's not for real. That's not how I see it at all.
Me neither.
Yeah. You know, what I see is that we're now discovering that there's lots of value in all these different lineages, and some of them have more expertise in one area than another. Some lineages are fantastic with energy healing. Others don't pay attention to it. Some are really in the body and they're tantric and they get you into an incredible connection physically with other people. Others are totally not in the body. I happen to like the body. Okay. So,
yeah. You know what I'm saying? Me too.
Yeah. So there's all of this. It's like there's now an open culture because all the secrets are out. All the traditional lineage secrets that had once been held by only a handful of people within each lineage, and you had to work really hard to get to the secret level. You can Google it now and find those secrets, right?
Exactly.
The shamans.
Which is crazy.
It's crazy, right? The shamans in the Amazon are teaching, you know, kids from Brooklyn how to be shamans. If you commit, because they're more interested, frankly, in the energetic alignment than they are in whether or not you are born within their tribe. They realize that if this, this knowledge is going to be preserved, you got to teach it to anybody who's been sent to you, if you're the shaman. And some people, you know, like we had Itzhak Biri on the show, who is a, you know, Israeli advertising guy who lived in Manhattan for most of his adult life. And, you know, he went into the Amazon in the Andes, you know, 20 something years ago. And the shaman looks at him and goes like, okay, you're going to be my apprentice. And he's like, what, me? Why? And now he's this really powerful, brilliant, attained, you know, shaman who gave up advertising. And, you know, it's just, this is what's going on. It's an extraordinary moment. And Rythmia is playing a big role in that for a lot of people. I know that because it's coming back to me.
Oh, that's good. I'm glad.
Man.
I'm glad.
Yeah. So thank you for what you're doing.
And thank you, Ken, for all that you did. And you really got the ball rolling for Rythmia. I never really got the chance to thank you for talking to me and counseling me and helping me in the very early stages here. It meant everything at that
time. Oh, meant everything. That's very sweet of you. I mean, I actually never thought of that.
For real.
I was happy to have a few days in Costa Rica at your retreat and to do medicine with you guys. And it was just an incredibly beautiful experience. I'm really happy
it was super helpful. And I really mean that. I really thank you. And I'm appreciative.
Well, okay. Well, I'll take that. Thanks. And hope to see you guys down there soon.
We hope to get you back, Ken.
I want to come. I'm going to come soon. We'll figure that out. I'll have to look at my ridiculous calendar, but I would love to do it.
Yeah, but we want to get you here. So come back.
I will. I will for sure. Okay. Thank you. And thank you for doing the show. It was great to have you on.
Thank you so much.
I want to thank Gerard Powell and you too for being with us. You can find out more about Rythmia at rythmia.com. And you spell that RYTHMIA.com. You can also find out more about Rythmia and Jerry at the movie, The Reality of Truth. I also want to thank our producer, Jose Alfaro and the Acast team. Our theme music is Measure by Measure by Paul D. Miller, a.k.a. DJ Spooky, from his album, The Secret Song. And our interstitial music are tracks by The Human Experience, Sunu, from the album Soul Visions with Rising Appalachia, and Here for a Moment on the album Gone, Gone Beyond. Go check them out. That's all for now. We'll be back next week.
Find the others.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.